careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Welcome back. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz, your producer and host of Paranormal Encounter Series, as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. As always, I have an interesting show in store for all of you, so sit back and relax. A few updates since our last podcast. All episodes can now be heard on YouTube and Twitter. To find an episode, type in Paranormal Encounters podcast series and search for a segment that interests you. And also now for my books on Amazon and Kindle. All 7 books can be found on Amazon and Kindle on pages 1 through 3. Book 6, entitled Through a Child's Eyes, and Book 7, Haunted Phenomena, have just been released. They are wonderfully illustrated and contain interesting paranormal encounters from everyday people. If you are interested in purchasing any of my books, start by going to my website to view their covers and descriptions at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com or go directly to amazon.com, type in Paranormal Encounters into the search bar, and scroll down. So, let's get started. Here is what is on the agenda for this episode. In segment 1, Paranormal Topics, I will discuss a general topic. The topic for this week will be Children's Perspectives About Ghosts. Segment 2, Beyond the Grave, will be narrated by a voice talent who will share with you ghostly encounters as experienced by young children and teens. Segment 3, a very popular segment, Ghosts in the News! A voice talent will report an interesting news story about a ghost sighting to enlighten even the most skeptical ghost disbeliever. Segment 4, also a very popular segment called Maynard and Mildred. Maynard continues to interact and be picked on by Mildred, even though Maynard doesn't quite believe in ghosts. And segment 5, a new segment called Life Beyond Death, as narrated by a voice talent, will take us to an alleged haunted location to explore the mysteries of one or more energies that are still hanging around. If you have a story you would like to share, please write to my email account at krschutz1@yahoo.com. That's krschutz1@yahoo.com. Before we get started on the first segment, let's have a word from this podcast series sponsor.
Donate. Simply click the button that says Donate on the podcast page located on the right-hand side to contribute to this program. We appreciate your willingness to pay it forward.
This segment is called Paranormal Topics. The topic for discussion will be children's perspectives about ghosts. This is the educational portion of the podcast. According to research, those who believe in the paranormal are commonly questioned by skeptics and often challenged to present their evidence. In most cases, findings suggest people who believe or perceive they have had an unexplained experience with the paranormal may selectively search for evidence to confirm their beliefs. Although they may believe they have found evidence to validate their experiences, it is not always conclusive and may not authentically conclude that the paranormal actually exists. Around the age of 9, when I had what I felt was my first experience with the paranormal, which happened in my maternal grandparents' home, I was clueless about what I was truly experiencing. I knew something didn't feel right, and I became increasingly fearful about being in their home by myself. My view about the paranormal equaled, you must see a ghost to know it is there. I was clueless about what energy was, and that energy could not be destroyed or vanish once a death had occurred. So if energy can never be destroyed, where does it go? It either remains and goes somewhere, passes through to another dimension, hangs around, or is transferred to something in the process of its rebirth, such as into another human being, animal, plant, or living organism. Research has documented two clear cases that reincarnation does truly exist. The first story is that of a 6-year-old child by the name of Shante Devi, who back in the 1930s lived in India and proclaimed to have had a husband. She was 6 years old at the time when she told her parents that she wasn't living in the right house or in the right city, and recognized that she was also not in her own body. She claimed she lived elsewhere in India, was married, had a child, and knew all the dirty secrets of her family and relatives. Let me remind you that this young gal was 6 years old. Her stories were validated when she led investigators to the exact locations where she lived, pointed out her husband as well as her son. The other story that was validated was that of a 2-year-old boy by the name of James Leiningiger, who was a former World War II fighter pilot by the name of James Houston. He was able to give the names of 3 of his best friends during his war years and could also pinpoint where his plane went down in the middle of the ocean. Both of these stories, the Shante Devi story and the James Leiningiger story, have been validated in research to be authentic that reincarnation can exist. My turning point about the paranormal occurred just after May of 2007. During May of 2007, in a routine visit to my paternal grandparents' home to take pictures of it, I unsuspectingly photographed my deceased paternal great-grandparent and aunt in a screened window. This grandparent of mine died probably around the 80 years old, and this young aunt of mine had passed away around 10 years old. Both were in the hospital when they passed away. She showed herself to be approximately 6 to 7 years old, and he showed himself sporting a mustache, which he never wore at all while he was alive. The only other individual that was perhaps the man with this young lady was her doctor, who I managed to find a picture of, looked fairly similar to him, and did sport a mustache. So confusion about surrounding who at least the man was remains a mystery, but in looking at the young gal who actually looks just like the rest of my family members, that one I believe is final in its conclusions. My quest to find answers or understand why these individuals showed to me in the window took me into the direction of exploring the paranormal a little bit more deeply and challenged my notion that if ghosts do truly exist, they would actually show themselves to me regardless of them being a relative or someone familiar. To date, I have nearly documented about 100 authentic cases that have concrete evidence, some that of course couldn't be explained, some I call the paranormal, and of course others I call a combination of both. My experiences have included intelligent, residual, demonic, and fragments of the unexplained types of hauntings. In the majority of my cases that I have investigated, as the research may suggest, I did not selectively seek out cues or label situations to be paranormal. In all of my cases, I allowed the energy or apparition to come to me, to show itself in ways that defies logic and reason. So, for example, here's an example for you. If a doorknob turns in front of you and nothing is touching it on either side, then what on earth is turning the doorknob? My mind is not that strong to be able to turn a doorknob. However, when something like this occurs, it does freak you out. With the many experiences I have had since the age of 9, some terrifying, some very mild, I have turned my questions now back to my younger years to determine how young children see their ghostly experiences. Research indicates that interest in the psychology of paranormal belief has grown steadily since the 1970s. Evidence implies survivors of childhood physical and or sexual abuse, alcoholic parents, and unsettled home environments report higher levels of paranormal belief than others who grew up in less stressful environments. However, I am not totally sold on this implied statement, as my type of family environment, for the most part, didn't seem any different than anyone else's, yet I felt particularly sensitive where the person next door didn't have any sensitivity at all. Turning this back to my own experiences with the paranormal and in reflection of my own childhood upbringing, I may have been a little bit more sensitive than most children, but my sensing of cues in my environment and about the paranormal, again, in my opinion, had nothing to do with my upbringing. In fact, many of my siblings also reported the sensing of paranormal activity in my maternal grandparents' home as I did, only bringing their perceptions to my attention late in my later years. In most cases, if you remove the narrative and the persuasive influencing factors, then what were they feeling as compared to myself? Some research infers that children growing up in stressful homes and who believe in the paranormal state that their experiences are nothing more than a signal to the brain engaging in a coping strategy. Though I would have to question whether this is truly the case when a child least expects an encounter and reacts to it, whether fear was involved, no fear, some fear. The question is, as always, does a child engage in any type of coping strategy when something out of the norm presents itself to him or her? If you take coping and stress out of the equation and focus a person's reaction to their environmental cues, nearly 80%, 84% of those who were studied in a particular study proclaimed to have had an experience with the paranormal and also believed that their experiences were meaningful and authentic. Recalling my younger years, I will throw my hat into the ring at this point and state the first time I encountered what appeared to be a negative or demonic energy was in my maternal grandparents' home. The symptoms I felt when I walked into that home were when I was there by myself, remained relatively neutral. However, the symptoms I felt being there turned into fear. If you can only imagine going into a home where you trust and it feels peaceful, only to be there for a while and then all of a sudden have this really nagging feeling inside of you that something is just not right in the environment, that is exactly what I went through when I went into that house. At the point that I realized that something was not right, you could see me running down a stairwell faster than a lightning bolt, getting outside the house, and almost basically throwing up onto the lawn because something that I felt inside of me wanted to cause me to throw up. Was I seeking a paranormal moment when I went into this house? No, I was not. Did I experience a paranormal moment? Yes, I did, but I didn't realize that this was happening to me until later on in my years when I actually delved into this phenomena and realized what exactly was happening to me. The possibility of life beyond death puzzles most people and is the number one question that people generally ask. Where do we go after we die? Throughout history, religion and spiritual doctrine have been used to make sense out of our unexplained experiences. However, with more modern times and thinking, many of us are now questioning whether spiritual reasoning needs to be reevaluated and turned back towards scientific explanations or unconventional ways of thinking. When many people all over the world report they have had an encounter that they simply cannot explain, one cannot ignore or pass off the many reports as overactive imaginations. With visuals such as the internet, YouTube, evidence by devices and cameras, the countless television shows now trying to demonstrate and show the unusual to us, how does one simply explain that something out there does not exist? The question now is, what is it? If an imprint of a person shows itself in a translucent form, how can one deny that this energy of someone of the past does or does not exist? Research has broadly defined the paranormal to include religion, psychic phenomena, witchcraft, superstitions, extraordinary life forms, and precognitions. Research has also attempted to explain that people appearing to experience the paranormal have lowered reasoning abilities, hormonal changes, especially in adolescence, disassociation and personality factors believed to heighten fantasy and a higher belief in the paranormal. Although this does not explain the reactions animals have to questionable environments, one cannot deny the fact that most animals, cats and dogs in particular, have become our alert systems to something unusual that may be going or occurring in our homes. Narratives are interesting, because otherwise known as stories, because narratives have strong persuasive effects on people and, of course, the experiencer. That is probably why most people are very cautious around their children when they believe they may have some type of paranormal activity going on in their household, not to engage the discussion or upset the child, as this could also play into a very active imagination. Narratives influence decision-making in a variety of contexts to protect the likelihood of events. The strong influence of narratives not only affects brain absorption and imprinting in the brain, but can also be a factor in the development of facial recognition and matrixing of the face of unexplained cues in the environment. So how does someone react to the dialogue of the experiencer in times when the experiencer absolutely feels that they've had an experience? If one were to perhaps agree with or appease the experiencer of their paranormal moment, one can also perhaps verify that this persuasive message might actually strengthen the person's reasoning, validating the event in their mind to be real and not just simply a figment of their imagination or something that was caused in the environment. Now let's turn this all back to children's perspective, shall we? Memory research infers that children under the age of 4 rarely recall much of their earlier year experiences. This is not the case for every child, but in most cases, it's more difficult to recall life events before the age of 4 than beyond that. This is likely due to brain development. My husband told me he vaguely recalls having an imaginary playmate around the age of 3 who he played with periodically. I asked him if he could describe the child, to which he stated to me that he had no memory of that, just recalled playing with a boy. It just so happens that his playmate's name was the name of perhaps his deceased brother, who passed away long before he was born, and the name was never spoken in front of him by his parents. As odd as this may sound, to date he can even begin singing songs that are playing in other people's heads, which is actually quite humorous if you're sitting there thinking of a song and then all of a sudden he starts singing it. What is that? I cannot explain what that is, or what he may have that's working in his brain to cause that, but we do know for a fact that there's obviously some type of something going on in his brain, and also maybe some type of sensitivity. The day he was playing with his imaginary friend, his mother questioned him as to who he was playing with. When he told her the name of the child, she said nothing. Years later, she shared the story with him, but also told him of his deceased brother's name. Children are particularly sensitive. I think most of us know that. They are open books to life. They are innocent. They are sensitive to the cues around them that most adults are not. Children and animals alike appear to see and hear what most of us cannot at an older age. Children in their innocence do not purposely seek out evil or imaginary friends. I am not discounting that children create imaginary friends. However, in most cases, they generally designate their friend to be a toy or a doll, not an invisible figure one cannot see. I would be the first to admit that as one of many children in my family, I have seen some of my brothers and sisters use their imagination to the umpteenth degree to create figures and playmates that do not exist. However, many of their imaginary moments were generally coupled with suggestive ideas or names they have seen on television, use of a video game, other game, or desire to be someone they are not, such as a superhero. In some cases, they create an imaginary friend to play with when alone, only to grow out of this phase as they age. As a child, I was not only sensitive, but I knew I was different than others when being able to intuitively feel cues or events around me. Maybe my brain was hardwired differently than most, but it always puzzled me as to how I could see what others could not see, especially the big picture, which never decreased, by the way, as I aged. When it involved the paranormal, my sense was actually through my gut intuition and my senses of feeling whatever was around me. In my book entitled Through a Child's Eyes, I received permission to conduct brief interviews with young children and teens. My mission was to determine what it was that made children more open or sensitive to paranormal phenomena. In rare cases, I would find a child with an overactive imagination. However, in most cases, they're telling me a narrative was generally not made up, embellished, or a desire to gain some type of attention. In most of my cases, in having brief chats with children of various ages, what they experienced with the paranormal had varying reactions. Some were not affected at all. They were more matter of a fact. Some were not certain of what had happened to them. Some were indifferent, and in some cases, having an imaginary friend. Some were terrified because the entity attempted to harm them. This is when one definitely knew that there might have been something paranormal in their home. And in other cases, their personalities could be drastically changed just by this energy in their home. In most cases, when sharing the story, most children and teens told me that their caretakers or school officials did not believe them when they tried to tell them that something was definitely wrong. So let's start with children under the age of 4. Most common reactions to a paranormal event involved indifference, acceptance, or what appeared to be mild trauma, in other words, confusion. For example, a child who experiences the loss of a beloved animal may claim to see that animal one or two days later and be insistent that the animal showed itself but disappeared. With no additional encouragement or dialogue from the parent, the child would either remember the encounter or forget about it. Children over the age of 4 to the age of 9 may intuitively feel something that isn't right in their environments and may be more reactive or sensitive. It is also likely that at this point the child may be more involved in reading spooky stories or watching horror-type movies on television, which may cause their brain development to embellish their imagination into seeing things that do not exist. As the brain tries to process fantasy from reality, the child makes a decision in their mind how to react to the experience. Now let's move to children and teens over the age of 9 to the age of 18. The brain has developed to a point where the child or teen can justify better what is fantasy and what is reality from from fantasy or an overactive imagination, I guess is what I want to say. They react in ways that suggest that this anything out of the unordinary might be a pointer to the child's mental condition. Due to the vast amount of information one can see on television or read about the paranormal, it is best to ask the child or teen what they experienced and allow them to share the details with a person rather than put cues or essentially give them hints about what they might have seen in their environment. In cases where children claim to see deceased people, most healthcare professionals see their condition as a chemical or hormonal imbalance and attempt to correct it by giving the child medication and telling him and her to seek counseling. This is a one-on-one decision to be made at the point of discovery. It is said that young girls and teens menstruating before the age of 25 can trigger imbalances in the home environmental condition. Brain development and how it functions is a large part of reasoning. Judgment and alleged assumptions is important to determine fact from fiction. Here's an example I had heard on a popular paranormal show to demonstrate how the children of a family household tried to get across to their dad that there was something demonic, negative, or odd happening to them in their home. The father basically stated that, that it was all part of their imagination and ignored their quest for guidance. It was at the point where the children experienced being locked in their room when they started screaming, and the father decided to attempt to get into the room, only to discover that he could not get into that door. He had to bust down the door in order to essentially release his terrified children from their horrific moments of being in that room with something. It's important to not buy into children's fantasy moments but it's also important to remain alert and neutral if you are receiving reports from your children that something doesn't feel quite right. When in doubt, ask questions. Don't get overly concerned about what they're saying, but on the other hand, pay attention to what might be going on in the environment. This brings us to a question of, so how do you determine when a child is trying to tell you they are experiencing something paranormal, and how do you know it's not simply their overactive imagination? This is a difficult question to answer. There is nothing worse for a child who is really experiencing something horrific to not be believed by their caretaker. Knowing most health professionals will not lean in this direction and will medicate the child before anything else, recall that they will probably label a condition to the child and then send them to a psychologist or a psychiatrist for further help. Let's turn a moment to research, to do some research here and talk about eye and brain development, to attempt to answer why children may be more prone to experiencing or seeing the paranormal. Some research indicates that young children's eyes may be in their developmental stages and act like X-ray machines or ultraviolet filters. And those of us who investigate the paranormal know that the use of an ultraviolet camera lens is needed to help us see active orbs flying about, mists and figures walking around. It is possible that a young child's eyes are in a stage that are so sensitive that they almost act like little radar machines. I want you to think about that for a moment, because that might be one thing to at least explain why at such a young age they can see things and we can't. Now, that doesn't necessarily explain animals, because they have good sensory at all ages. But that might explain something about a young child's age and their ability to see the paranormal. Let's move this into brain development. Brain development can affect a child's ability to reason and have judgment about the types of cues they may encounter. This might explain why some children aged 3 or 4 may have an imaginary playmate but do not show fear, because their brain development does not sense danger. Although the entity may present itself to the child with its physical scars from their death, the child doesn't always question what they see, but rather describe how they feel being in the presence of this entity or being. It's when the brain begins to develop and judgment steps in that either inactivates their playmate moments or their brain questions something not typical in their environments. This is something to think about. With all of this being said, and I know there's a lot of information being thrown at you here, one truly needs to wonder, what is it that makes it different for children than it does for most adults? And we can narrow this discussion maybe down to eye development, brain development, and something that most of us may not even be gifted with, just the extrasensory and fields that some may actually possess as part of their hardwiring of their being. Something to think about. Here ends this podcast segment for today. Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 2, otherwise known as Beyond the Grave. This segment will be narrated by a voice talent who will share with you ghostly encounters as experienced by young children and teens. Stay tuned.
I see dead people. My name is Teresa. When I was 12 years old, I began seeing dead people. When I shared this with my friends, they would look at me and roll their eyes. One day in school, while I was in my classroom, I saw a man come up behind my friend who was standing in the doorway, and it looked as if he was going to hurt her. I screamed to her, "Watch out!" When she turned around, no one was behind her. I ended up in the principal's office. I was drug tested, my locker searched, and was told to see a psychologist. Pregnant widow. My name is Mandy. When I was 14 years old, I went to a funeral with my mom and dad. Their friend, a man by the name of Jack, had died in a motorcycle accident. As the funeral progressed, I couldn't help but notice that there was a man standing right next to the widow, with his arm around her and his hand over her belly. She didn't seem to know that he was standing right next to her. No one else could see him.
Lady in the Closet. My name is Timmy. I am 10 years old. I sleep with my nightlight on. The reason why I do this is because there are times when a woman wearing a long white dress comes out of my closet holding flowers. The flowers have no smell to them. The woman looks sad. At first, when I saw her, I was puzzled. Who is she? She is nice to me, but scares me. I do not understand why she likes to hide in my closet. My mother tells me what I see is only a dream.
Mumbling in the kitchen. My name is Chris. When I was 16 years old, I was lying on the couch in our living room. I was home alone. I woke up to hearing noises coming from the kitchen. The noises sounded like a group of people having a small party. When I got up to see who was in the kitchen, I discovered the cupboard doors and drawers were open with no one in there. I ran out of the house to the barn, only to find the gates open, but the animals stayed put. Was someone guarding them?
Lincoln Logs. My name is Mike. When I was 3 years old, I had a playmate by the name of Robert. Robert and I would play Lincoln Logs together on the floor. One day my mother asked me who I was talking to while playing. I told her I was playing with a boy who called himself Robert. Apparently Robert was the name of my deceased brother who died before I was born. My mother and father had never spoke of him.
Fishing by the pond. My name is Mark. When I was 7 years old, my brother Ralph, who was 5 years old, and I would go to our favorite fishing pond behind our house. We would fish for sunfish and crappies. Ralph and I would go fishing every Saturday. We usually had a contest to see who could catch the most fish that day. One day when we were fishing, a large snapping turtle caught his line and pulled him into the water. He didn't know how to swim. I couldn't help him. He drowned. When I go fishing at this pond, I swear there are days when he is sitting right next to me.
Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 3 of the podcast known as Ghosts in the News. This segment will be reported by a voice talent who will share with us an interesting ghost sighting witnessed by everyday people around the globe. Stay tuned.
Welcome everyone to segment 3 called Ghosts in the News. What ghostly ghouls are lurking in your area? This story takes us to an undisclosed location as reported on a Spanish language page dedicated to hauntings by Mirror News, posted on January 12, 2017, entitled Demon-Possessed Doll Blinks and Nods Head Before Entire Room Shakes, Leaving Young Girl Terrified. Two videos are shown of a young girl whose father set up a camera when she complained something was bothering her. The first video clip shows the girl playing with her toys on the floor when a doll in the corner of a room suddenly moves its head from side to side. The girl is oblivious to what is going on. The second video clip shows the unsuspecting girl drawing on a piece of paper on a table when papers on that table and objects in the room start to hurl themselves all over. She runs out of the room frightened. Skeptics who have watched the videos feel the events are staged. Believers question who would purposefully trick their child into partaking in spooky events causing fear or trauma. And that is our ghostly moment in the news.
Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 4 entitled Maynard and Mildred. Stay tuned.
Hello, Maynard. What's the matter? Haven't seen a ghost today? Maynard, science can't explain everything. Maynard, just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
I just hate being trapped in the house when it's snowing. I think I'll go outside and build a snowman.
Hello, Maynard.
Holy crap, Mildred. What are you doing here? Don't interrupt me while I'm building the world's largest snowman.
Maynard, maybe you should stick to an average-sized snowman.
Mildred, there's no such thing as an average-sized snowman. People will come from everywhere to see my snowman.
Maynard, maybe I can help you roll that big snowball for its body.
Mildred, I could use the help, but you don't have any hands to help me roll this huge snowball up this hill.
Are you putting that huge snowball on the hill? Do you think that that's really a good idea?
Of course. They have to be able to see it from miles away.
Sounds difficult, Maynard.
Oh, I don't think it will really be that hard. You know what they say, no pain, no gain.
Perhaps you should ask some of your friends to help you in your creation.
Don't be ridiculous. None of my friends would buy into my vision.
I think you need to wear a stronger pair of glasses so you can see the situation a little more clearly, Maynard. Wink, wink.
Mildred, it just takes a little natural skill. Stand back. Here I go.
Wow, Maynard, be careful. You are rolling an awfully large snowball.
I'm almost up to the top of the hill.
Oh, brother. Maynard, you sound really tired. Maybe you should just stop for a rest.
If I stop for a rest, the snowball will roll to the bottom of the hill, and then I'll have to start all over again.
Nonsense. Here, let me help you.
Hey, you're not supposed to be pushing in that direction.
It's easier pushing it down the hill, Maynard.
I'm losing control of the snowman's body. Ah!
Watch out below, everyone. The snowman is on the loose. Watch out, Maynard.
I'm going up in the snow.
Watch out, dog. The snowball will release you once you hit that tree below. Tree? I can't bear to look. Oh, not good.
What happened to me?
Pull up your big boy pants there, Maynard. Looks to me like you have to start all over again.
Wait! King! No! King is eating the snowman's nose!
Deal with it. Can't you just use another rock instead, Maynard? Whew! Maynard, I think I'm going to take off. Have fun rolling your snowball back up the hill. Maybe you should apologize to King for traumatizing it. And if I do find your shoe that flew off of you somewhere in the snow, I'll get it back to you. By the way, have you figured out yet who will be your Valentine's Day sweetheart?
Let's take our final break. When we come back, we will hear segment 5 entitled
Life.
As narrated by a voice talent who will take us to an alleged haunted location to explore the mysteries of one or more energies that are still
hanging around.
Stay tuned.
Just when you think you are safe from the world around you, you suddenly realize that no matter where you go, you are not alone. Welcome to Life Beyond Death. The first of 3 alleged reports in the same house take us to Alabama, where a house that resides on a street corner seems to be of comfort to more than just one ghost. Sally, who resided in an older styled home, reports she used to play with an imaginary friend by the name of Amy. Her parents thought it was normal for a little kid to have an invisible playmate, so they ignored her when she told them that Amy visited frequently. Amy was about 5 years old. She had beautiful long blonde hair, pale blue eyes, and wore a white dress. Although Sally's parents didn't believe Amy was real, one day they discovered that a small girl was run over by a truck in the street just outside of their home. Ghostly visitor number 2. Sally reported when the house was being built back in the 1800s, a man fell from the rafters just outside of her bedroom door and died in the house. A gray stain would appear on the ceiling in the hallway. As the stain grew bigger, it would take the shape of a man, who eventually fell from the ceiling onto the floor, shaking the walls, looking confused and disappearing. Ghostly visitor number 3. Sally's great-grandfather died in the house around the early 1890s. On occasion, she could hear him shuffling his feet as he walked down the hallway. At times, she could smell his chewing tobacco, biscuits, coffee, and tomato gravy. What ghostly moment might you encounter before you realize that most of us are not alone?
Be careful! When you
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Subscribe to this program by clicking on the link on her podcast page to follow upcoming episodes. Thanks for listening. Take care, and until next time, be careful what you wish for. The script, vocal talents, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.